Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to American Italian Radio, where we explore the life of American Italian entertainers, storytellers, and artisans. There are 100 million Italophiles, people who like all things Italian, and our program is designed to share the American Italian heritage with all of you. We invite our guests to discuss their lives, their careers, and how their American Italian heritage has influenced them, and to tell us about their new projects. And now, let's join our hosts, Sal LaFerry and Don Mazzella.
Well, hello, and welcome to the American Italian Radio channel on Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to Air Radio, which is sponsored by Protective Countermeasures and by the Small Business Digest. I'm Sal LaFerry, and I'm here with my co-host of Air Radio, Don Mazzella. As you know, what we hope to bring you each week on the Air Network is the best in Italian-American talk radio. We try to bring leaders in each of their respective fields, talking about where they are today, the memories of growing up Italian, and what is new and exciting in their worlds. We invite you to visit our website and share it among all your friends. If you'd like to be a guest on the show and know a person who would be interesting and for us to have as a guest to sit down and chat with, then please contact us through the website, AmericanItalianRadio.com. And now I'd like to introduce my good friend and co-host, Mr. Don Mazzella.
How you doing, Sal?
Doing okay, Don. So what's new and exciting?
Well, you know, today's beginning of our country's birthday, and the interesting thing is how many sacrifices Italian Americans have made for this country. I found out an interesting fact today. After, ironically, Polish, and during World War II, there were more Italian Americans awarded the Medal of Honor than any other ethnic group.
Really?
Yeah, I found that fact out today. Came by. It kind of tells you the contributions we made over from the world, from World War II, Korea, etc. That generation's dying out. The Korean generation's dying out. It's so funny. There was a special on about the fact that Lucky Luciano kept the docks rolling during World War II. Of course, he got his reward, which was his pardon, but they sent him back to Sicily.
But he also got the reward of keeping the docks open so that they can continue operations.
Well, that too. They didn't mention that in the special. How do you feel about that?
That he kept the docks open to keep his operation going, and then he winds up getting his freedom after the war?
I was thinking more about the Italian-American contribution.
The contribution part of it, yeah. You know, I think one of the problems with us is that we have this stereotype associated with us with guys like, you know, Lucky Luciano and the gangster stories. But I think if you go on the National Italian American Foundation, NIAF.org, if you go on their website and you look up what some of the contributions have been over the years, of Italian Americans, it's pretty impressive. That, you know, the things that they've done, and it's worth the read. It's worth taking the time and go looking at. But anyway, let's get to tonight's show. Tonight we have Sal Trelongo, who is a principal at the Transfiguration Academy in Bergenfield, New Jersey. But his path to his current role is anything but straight. He served in the U.S. Army, got a teaching degree, and taught in New York City schools until the financial crisis forced job cuts. He had a successful 20-year career before retiring at Chase Bank, and he's come full circle, coming back to teaching, and is now the school principal. We're pretty happy to have him in the studio with us tonight. Sal, good evening. Nice to have you with us.
Good evening. It's very nice to be here.
This is... I got to tell you, it's a little confusing, you know, it's like I'm talking to myself saying, hello, Sal. It's just, you're giving me identity crisis. Anyway.
Well, he's from Queens. You're from?
Sal's from Brooklyn. Brooklyn.
And you?
I'm from the Bronx. Well, originally East Harlem the city, and then up in the Bronx. 10 years old, moved up. But So, Sal, tell us about your background and how you came to be a principal at a Catholic school.
Well, you summed up my background fairly well.
Okay, let's go to commercial.
Yeah, I've always been interested in teaching. I graduated from Fordham with a history degree and a teaching certificate. And after leaving J.P. Morgan Chase, as it then became, I accepted a position teaching history in my parish school. Shortly afterwards, the principal resigned, and based on my management experience at the bank and my teaching certifications, I was asked to take over as the acting principal until I could find the principal. And as luck would have it, the search committee selected me to be the principal of then my parish school. And 2 years later, I found myself back in the merger business. We had undergone and survived two mergers at the bank, and now I was given the task of merging three schools into one, which then became Transfiguration Academy. I applied to be the principal there as well, and that selection committee from the Archdiocese and the pastors of three schools and the parishes selected me. And I'm very fortunate and happy that they did.
But you had gotten the education started way back when you were in the military, correct? Your education path with to be a teacher.
Well, yes. Actually, from Fordham, and I was an ROTC cadet, but I graduated. I was in the School of Education at Fordham University. Graduated from that, went into the service for 4 years of active duty and 6 years of reserve duty. Started teaching in New York City, in Brooklyn. And the first financial crisis happened under A-Beam. I guess I'm dating myself. But they went back 7 years on my license, and a number of us got laid off. And I had a young family, and that's how I wound up in New Jersey, as a matter of fact. I found a job here in New Jersey in River Edge for an insurance company, and they moved out a couple of years later. And I went back to the city working for Chase Manhattan Bank.
What do you find most rewarding about being a principal?
Well, I think at this point in my life, both being able to be a teacher and now principal, without getting too sentimental, I thank God every day for the opportunity at this stage of my life to do something positive and worthwhile. I work with the children. I work with a great group of teachers, very dedicated professional people, and every day it's a challenge, but it's very rewarding.
What are some of those challenges?
I think every day has unique challenges, but if I were going to pick on one particular challenge that kind of transcends over the entire process, it's change management. We're undergoing this series of changes now in education. Common Core standards, new technologies coming in, educational theory and practices changing. And I think as a Catholic school principal with limited resources, the challenge is really to evaluate the new processes, the new technologies, and choose the best one that, given the resources we have, will satisfy and accomplish our mission as a Catholic school.
What in your business background did you find helps you most of being a principal?
During a 25-year career at Chase and 3 years at the insurance company, I've had a varied background and career. At Chase, I was primarily an operations officer, but as a vice president, I did financial management, budgeting, cost accounting, project management. And I use all of the things that I've learned and try to apply them to my current situation, because as a Catholic school principal, again, you're dealing with a very limited staff. The teaching staff is in place, but there's no real support staff. I have a secretary and administrative assistant, but as the principal, I get to do the budget, the strategic planning, get to do evaluation of technology and purchasing of hardware and software and a number of different things. And on occasion, I even pick up a paintbrush and a spacolite and putty and plaster and paint. It's not uncommon also to see me with a broom on occasion.
We say watch the windows, but you've got the same thing in small business.
So did you go to Catholic school?
My entire education, except for my master's degree, was in Catholic school. I went to St. Francis de Chantel in Brooklyn, Severian High School, Fordham University. And then while I was in the service, I had the opportunity to get my master's through the University of Southern California.
So you went through the nuns, the Christian Brothers?
Oh, yes. And well, actually, the Severian Brothers, Dominican nuns, and Jesuit priests.
Oh, my.
So, and a spattering of lay people, but they're the ones that set the curriculum. Those are the ones that had the overriding administration of the schools that I've learned, from the Dominican nuns to the Severian Brothers to the Jesuits.
So what's the differences that you see today? I mean, this could just go on for an hour. I mean, there's got to be a gazillion differences.
And there are. It's vastly different from the schools that I've attended.
Well, the beating stopped for one, right?
My director of the lower school, Sister Madeline, listens to this, she'll probably yell at me. I still say yes, sister, after 60 years, but I always thought that when a nun took their final vows, they were given their habit, their rosary, and a brass ruler. I thought that was part of the uniform. But it's vastly different today. Aside from that, whether that you subscribe to that being right or wrong, in my day, most Catholic schools, regardless of what level you were at, normally had a religious principal and faculty, whether it be a sister or a brother, and the teachers were primarily religious. Today, you don't find that. You will have a principal who is probably a lay person, a lay faculty. We're fortunate at Transfiguration. Priests from our three parish schools teach one religion class a week to every level, but that is not common. Unfortunately, today there are a lack of priests going around, and we have economies of scale where we have a number of priests that can come in and fit it into their schedule on different days of the week. But that's...
And no nuns.
One nun who just celebrated her 60th jubilee as a nun. And she helps tremendously in her 60 years. She does some remedial work with our children who need to be brought up to grade level. And that's another difference that we have in Catholic schools. You know, the Catholic schools in the past took the cream of the crop. They had waiting lists. Today, we take people, and they were mostly homogeneous from the parish. Today, you have a diverse population of children of every ethnic background, different religions, and different educational not levels, but abilities, academic abilities. And it's our job to educate all children.
You mentioned something quick about with different religions. Has that become problematic? Or is there certain religious requirements that get imposed on you?
The requirement for children in a Catholic school in the Archdiocese of Newark, and that's the only thing I'm familiar with and will speak to, is that they take religion classes, regardless of their religion. Now, they may opt out of some services that we have, and we certainly don't expect them to go to communion, you know, mm-hmm. when we have First Friday Masses or liturgies, but it has not been problematic. In fact, having a very diverse population is something that we consider a strength. I've said on more than one occasion to a number of the parents, whether that be at concerts or large gatherings of them, that I'd want the United Nations to come and visit us, not us to go to them, and maybe they should see how people should act together. I mean, we're not angels. They're normal kids. They have their normal growing up issues and concerns, but overall, they are remarkable in what they do and how they react and help one another.
That's interesting.
But what are the benefits of a Catholic education?
At this point, I should say, I'm glad you asked. You know, before I get into the benefit of that, let's just take our society in general. There seems to be a lack of civility going on, sometimes amoral and downright immoral actions and activities, and it permeates every level of society and every media. And I think, you know, you can say that there are several benefits to a Catholic school education. And the Catholic school itself, including ours, is concerned with educating the whole child, physically, mentally, spiritually. It develops the ability in a child, which we hope to use correct judgment. It promotes a sense of values in them. It prepares them for a professional life, even at the early ages. You know, we prepare them to get into very fine high schools through excellent academic programs. But more than that, I think we try to develop in them an ethical sense. I wrote down something for a journal once that said, the seeds of ethical and moral behavior are planted and nurtured in the Catholic elementary school, fertilized and strengthened in the Catholic high school, and bear a beautiful and bountiful harvest in the form of Catholic college and university graduates who will become future leaders. And I think that's what you want to have today. You want to have leaders and people in positions of leadership, whether it be in the political arena or in private industry, corporate America, who make their decisions and base their judgments on ethical values. And that's what we try and teach. To some extent, you know, for better or worse, they accept these values and go forward. It's not a what can you do for me atmosphere. It's what can we do for other people and what's the right thing to do for the benefit of all.
You know, when you talk about school system, when you talk about schools in general, you know, one of the points that we had always brought up in the show was that, you know, there's the Jewish schools, the Irish schools, there are all of the, I guess, specialty sort of schools. So I guess, you know, it's sort of a two-part question. One, do you see a real benefit to having those kind of schools, or is there a drawback to it? And I would think maybe it might be a drawback because based on a lot of what you had just said, you know, having children from different religions and getting that, you know, having the UN come to you, you would probably lose a lot of that. And if you had a school that was just Jewish schools or just, you know, Irish or whatever. So, you know, what do you think about that? Do you think that's something that would be good? And, you know, do you think there would be benefit to having more Italian schools?
My first reaction to what I think about that is I can get into a heck of a lot of trouble by answering that question. I see the benefit of having those schools. I think they maintain the culture and the traditions that are ingrained in their society and their cultures, and I think that's very important, as I do with all cultures. Why there are no Italian-American schools, I've given that some thought, especially growing up in an Italian household in an Italian neighborhood in Brooklyn. Everyone I knew was extremely proud of their Italian heritage, to a person, man, woman, and child. But we were supremely proud of the fact that we were Americans first. This is the country that provided my grandparents on both sides, maternal and paternal, with the opportunity through hard work and determination to be a success and to raise their families. We were Americans of Italian heritage. As such, we wanted American schools, or they wanted them for their children, either public or parochial, and to learn American history and the other subjects that would make them a success and fully functional in American society. Because they saw this the path to, especially in education, the path to success, freedom, riches, if you will, and getting those material things which everyone wanted, especially in that day and age going through the Depression and wanting a better life for their children. I think the vast majority of these immigrants of my grandparents' generation did not speak the language either. So it was very difficult for them. They could not establish schools, per se. But they insisted that their children get the best education. Education was primary. And each generation became more and more Americanized and were living the American dream. So to that extent, I think we brought our heritage with us. We do it through the family. And I think it's been very successful.
Cool. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We're just running a... we want to take a quick 30-second break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Sal Trelongo more about the growing up Italian and talking about a little bit more about the educational system. So we'll be right back.
Just how dangerous is social networking? Use of websites like Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube are all the rage. But what are the downsides of this new technology? The incidents of bullying, stalking, harassment, and inappropriate content are increasing. Just how dangerous is it? What can you do to protect your child and yourself from it? Go to ProtectiveCountermeasures.com for a free hour-long video on the dangers of social networking. That's ProtectiveCountermeasures.com for your free hour-long video.
We're back. We're here talking with Sal Trelongo and talking about the educational systems. And we want to get into a little bit about a little bit more into education and then get into about growing up Italian.
What personal satisfaction do you get out from being a principal of a Catholic school?
Well, I think I get an immense satisfaction out of being the principal of the school. As I mentioned before, you know, and without being too sentimental, I do thank God every day for the opportunity at this stage of my life to do something positive and worthwhile. But I also derive a great deal of satisfaction from watching the development of these young girls and boys from our pre-K all the way through the eighth grade, and then getting them into some of the finest high schools in the state, or in two states, as a matter of fact. We have a lot of people going to Regis High School in New York City, or to any of the very excellent Catholic high schools we have here, but also Bergen County Academies, Englewood Academies. And I derive a lot of pleasure from them coming back as well and telling us how well prepared they were for this. And now we've been around long enough, 7 years at Transfiguration Academy since we merged, that we can track some of our kids into the who have made some of the finest colleges, including the Ivy League. So that watching them develop is a great, great sense of satisfaction.
Sal, didn't you say two of your kids won places in a special in some program?
Our children have done a lot. When we created Transfiguration Academy from three schools, we had to prove to the Archdiocese of Newark that we were worthy of being called an academy. As such, we instituted a lot of different programs. We elevated our what other schools call specials, such as language, foreign language, to a major subject. We also instituted one of the only engineering programs in a Catholic elementary school in the state. We have come in the top 10 in the Future City Engineering Competition in the entire New Jersey state region 5 out of 7 years and 4 consecutive years. And we're very proud of that. This is a competition that's judged by the American Society of Civil Engineers. The children are given a theme for the year, whether it be nanotechnology or the environment, the ecology, and they have to do a written essay, research the theme on the internet. They have to build a simulated city using CAD, computer-assisted design software. They have to build a model of that city, and then they have to go to the last 3 years, Rutgers University, and defend their city and present it to the engineers, answer questions about it. And we're very happy that for the last 4 consecutive years, we were in the top 10 of all of New Jersey. And these are 7th and 8th graders that entered this competition.
Wow. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, we're very proud of that program.
So let's get into a little bit of a little bit more about the background, a little bit of about you, and it's sort of the fun part of the what I like to think of the show. So you mentioned that you grew up in Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn, New York. Yes, we moved to Brooklyn when I was 2 years old from Manhattan. My grandfather owned a 3-family home in the Bensonhurst section. Every time I listen to the news now, they have a new name for it, and they seem to be moving the borders of it. But we called it Bensonhurst, right on the border of Bay Ridge. My Uncle Jim's family lived in the upstairs front apartment. We lived in the upstairs back apartment. My Aunt Josie's family lived with my grandparents in the bottom floor. That was the largest apartment, and we all shared the house. I grew up with 7 cousins, well, actually 6. The only girl got married when I was very young and moved out of the house with her husband, so I grew up, there were 6 boys in there, and we enjoyed all the things that you did in Brooklyn in the late 50s, early 60s. We played stickball, touch football, went to the schoolyard, played basketball, and then our favorites, which I'm not sure too many of your listeners would recognize anymore, we played a game called King Queen in the alleyway, and of course, stoop ball.
Stoop ball.
And
sure.
Our house faced 17th Avenue in Brooklyn, and it's a wonder that any of us are alive, but we were fearless at that time and indestructible, as all, you know, teenagers were.
How do you think that influenced you?
I think that influenced me a great deal. I think it showed me how to cope with different situations. I think it taught me how to stand up for myself. It taught me family values and a sense of responsibility. And I tend to take that into everything I do today.
What do you remember most about your childhood that gives you the most pleasure today?
Well, again, it was playing those games. But also, I've known my wife since we were 15 years old. And every Sunday, that group of us would walk to St. Athanasius Church for the 10 o'clock Mass. And by the time we walked up, you could begin to smell the different aromas of the sauce cooking. And, you know, by the time the Mass was over and we walked back, certainly everything was ready and the smells were stronger. So I would always go upstairs to what would become my future mother-in-law and father-in-law's apartment, and she always had the sauce ready, and we called it gravy at the time, right? And she would say, "Do you want something?" And I'd say, "Sure, why not?" And I'd have something there, and then I'd go home and eat. So, and the Sunday dinners with my family. So those were very pleasant memories.
Was there one particular thing that sort of influenced you as a child that sort of stands out?
I think basically it was the people. Spent a lot of time. My mother was a stay-at-home mom, as most mothers were at that time, and we spent a lot of time with her when I was younger, you know, going shopping on what we call the Avenue, back and forth. And then as I got older and became a father myself, I began to realize the importance that my father played. I mean, you know, he was always there, but he worked shift work. He worked for the city. So every 2 weeks it would rotate.
What did he do?
My father started out in the Depression in the Department of Sanitation and worked his way up to becoming a foreman, a garage foreman. And Never complained.
Not in Manhattan by chance, was he?
He was
in, work in Brooklyn.
Both.
Really?
Both. He ran garages that I remember at 57th Street on the west side, and he was in Brooklyn, and also ran two marine transfer stations, one up on the upper west side and the other in Brooklyn.
I was just thinking it was one of those, this could have been one of those what a small world moment. My father was with the sanitation, with the city sanitation around the same era. That just would have been wild. It would have been a small world, but that's why I asked you about that.
No, and it could have been. I'm sure they ran across one another at some point in time. My uncle was also a district superintendent with them as well. They both went into the DSC, as they called it, at the same time.
How has your childhood influenced your lifetime work?
Oh, like I said, I think the lessons I learned there, to become self-sufficient, developing character, listening to my two half-brothers, and I think it's influenced me a great deal in becoming the person I've been today.
You've had, in essence, two careers. You've gone from the financial world and back to education. When you were a kid growing up, was there anything that you had that aha moment that said, I want to be a teacher or I want to be a banker?
I think in high school I started developing the idea of becoming a teacher. But was there an aha moment? No. I think it was gradual that I came to that. At one point in time, I wouldn't disagree with you, but at one point, I thought I'd make the Army my career. I thought up until that point in time, that was the best job I ever had. But then again, any job you have when you're 22 years old and traveling the world is a good job.
That's true.
What do you tell young Italian Americans?
Oh, I don't differentiate. I tell them the same thing that I tell all young people. And by the way, that's getting to be a larger and larger audience from where I stand. Everybody seems to be much younger nowadays. But I tell them to be themselves and do what's right. And after that, after you've done your best, then let God take care of the rest.
You know, one of the things we talk about on the show a lot is the heritage and losing a lot of those, the things that make the culture the culture. And I guess it's sort of an unfair question, but, where do you really see the American heritage going? I mean, I see the generations change, I see a difference in... We lose more and more of those things that made it special. At least it appears that we're losing it. Where do you see it going?
Well, I agree with you. I think we've lost an awful lot as the older generations have passed. And as society's changed, families now are spread out due to circumstances. People get jobs in different states, different locations. Mobility is certainly greater than it ever was. But I like to think that there's a resurgence in finding out about our heritage and the sacrifices that you mentioned at the beginning of the show and accomplishments that our forefathers, Italian forefathers, have made. It wasn't so long ago we took a trip, my wife's family got together and we went to the Tenement Museum in Lower Manhattan. And they have a department set up the way it was in the 1930s. And we learned a lot about the way people lived there. In fact, my wife and some of her family walked into the kitchen and said, that's the linoleum my aunt had in her house. And I think people are very interested. I see a lot of people of all nationalities wanting to get on genealogical websites, the Ellis Island Museum, and trying to find out about where their parents came from, where their grandparents came from, and what links there are. So I hope that it's developing more of an interest in people's heritage and culture. But I do think, you know, it's only natural. As we become more and more Americanized, we're going to lose that link. And it's through shows like this, and especially through family values, that I think you can carry on the heritage.
I mean, some of the things that they lost, like you lose the Sunday dinner.
Well, I was just going to say that. In my own family, you know, I've missed that. People are too busy, and they do other things, and they're over there, and part of my family's in Rhode Island, part of in other parts of New Jersey, and, you know, either down at the shore or doing things, you know, that are interesting to the children, my grandchildren. And it's difficult to get us all together at one time in one place unless it's a big holiday. But hopefully, you know, we try to maintain that sense of bonding and get together as often as possible.
Is there one thing that you miss? If I had to put you on the spot and say, what's the one thing you miss in the heritage and in the culture?
I would, two things, not one. The large family gatherings that we used to have where everybody was together. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody always got along, okay? But we were all together. And when it came down to it, family was family. And the other thing I miss particularly is lack of the language skills that we seem to have lost in not knowing Italian or our mother tongue, being able to converse in that and understand it. And I think that's a loss.
I think so. We're going to take a quick 30-second break. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Sal Trelongo, talking about what is going to come up for him and for the future, what his plans are. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
We're here with Sal Trelongo, and we're talking about culture, heritage, things that we're missing, things that how things have been changing over time. But let's throw this into a different speed. You know, you've retired, and you know you could have just sat back and you know and taken it easy. Yet you decided, you know, you're running a Catholic school now. You know, what comes next for you? I mean, you've had the finance career, not the principal. What's the next game you want to play? What's the next thing you want to do?
No, I think I'm doing what I want to do. I think, you know, looking back, I said, you know, when I was 22, that was the best job I ever had. I think now this is probably the best job that I've had in my career, certainly the most important and the most impact that I can make, some would say for good or for bad. But I've never worked so hard for so little and enjoyed it so much. It's been great. You know, all jobs have that moment where you go in there. I have a joke with my secretary, the school secretary. Every Friday I quit, and every Monday I come back. You know? I imagine eventually I'll have to retire, or if something happens before that, they can carry me out and, you know, wheel in the new principal. But until then, I tend to keep going as long as God gives me the strength to do what I can do.
Yeah, you're having fun doing what you're doing.
I am.
Well, my definition of retirement is doing what you want to do, not what you have to do.
That's an excellent way to put it, and I'm doing right now what I would like to do.
Would you recommend to others contemplating retirement, looking at something like this?
I can't say that I would. And the reason why is, and it's very much what you said, I recommend that people do what they enjoy, but do something. I think it's what keeps you young and keeps you vital and keeps you interesting.
When you retired, did you think that you would end up being a principal?
No, I didn't. The circumstances that led to me becoming the principal of a school, if you've written them, probably it would be on the fiction shelf somewhere. You know, people would say, no, that couldn't happen. But I'm very grateful that it did happen, and I'd like to continue doing it for as long as I can.
You're in a very, I guess, interesting position as a principal, and you get to shape and you know, sort of mind, shape and manipulate the minds of the next generations coming forward. What do you think, you know, we should be doing? Obviously, we're on, you know, American Italian Radio, so we want to keep this, you know, to the Italian culture, but how do we better communicate to the children, to the generation coming up about the culture and the heritage?
I think the operative word there is communicate. I think we should talk to the children and our grandchildren about our heritage. I think we should certainly be honest with them, but I think there's enough positive that could override some of the negative stereotypes that we have. And I think for those who can afford it in today's mobile age, and I mean mobile by you know, people who can travel, not mobile technology, if they could take trips. But using technology, you know, going the other way, if you can't afford to take a trip with a member of your family or members of your family to Italy, a great way is through reading. And a virtual tour on the internet. I think Italian Americans should reconnect with their past through their own personal genealogy, trying to find out where they came from, what makes them, and what made their grandparents and great grandparents come to America. I know I lost a great link when my aunt Sadie, whose name to me was always Aunt Sadie until she passed away, and I was about 50 years old and found out that her real name was Rosaria. Okay? But she was the family historian, but it was all locked up in her head. All right? She could give you dates and times of people's births, deaths, where they came from. And one day I asked about my grandfather, my paternal grandfather, her dad. And I said, tell me something about Grandpa. I know he owned a fruit and vegetable market in Lower Manhattan, or was part of it. And she said, yeah, but back in Italy, he had a farm. He raised citrus fruits and oranges and lemons. I said, wait a minute. I said, you need to have a lot of land to do that. I mean, these are groves. These aren't just, you know, one little tree, you know. I said, yeah. I said, was Grandpa rich back in the old country? And like every good businesswoman, she said, well, not rich, but comfortable. and why he came here was another story, but we'll talk about that later.
He wasn't
later.
Too comfortable over there. Well, that's why he had to come here.
But I do think it's great to relay stories about the family and to talk about it and to take trips. I mean, we're in one of the most populated Italian heritage areas in the nation, you know, And there's a lot of history here just by going around Manhattan. A lot of ethnic groups built this city. Among them were the Italian Americans. And I think that there's a great story to be told here. But most of all, I think we have to keep the family together.
That's all very difficult in these times.
But very.
Let me just move slightly. How can people help the Transfiguration Academy and other schools like yours keep these traditions alive?
Well, there's always the financial aspect, but we won't get into that now.
Why not?
Well, you can you can actually adopt a student or provide a scholarship fund or set up a scholarship fund for children so that we can keep the traditions going and make sure we're viable into the future. I'd like to get people like yourselves to come in and speak to the children. It doesn't have to be during Catholic Schools Week or Career Day, but regularly scheduled meetings. You know, we can have assembly programs to teach them about heritage, to teach them about the things that make America great, and how diversity is a strength that should unite people, not divide them, and find the common element among all people. I've often told my students, you know, as long as people have the same value system and the same basic desires, and I think that there's more of a common element between them and they can be friends than those things would separate us.
Tell me a little about the Adopt a Student program. Tell us a little more about that.
Well, it's really not a program per se, but you can always go to the school or any school and say, I would like to donate money, or it's a restricted fund. The money must be used for the tuition or academic purposes, books for a child or something related to their learning. But primarily it would be tuition, that we would pick a student who has financial need, and we would either partially or fully pay their tuition. This way the school remains viable, the student gets an education, and it's tax deductible as well, because you'd write the check to the school, which is a legitimate charitable deduction.
Is that program well known, or is this something that's not publicized as much?
It's not publicized, I think, at all in most schools. It's just something that would be done on an individual basis, and it would be more of a charitable donation. But there is today a growing need for this. The cost of education is rising. We're not the only Catholic school that is subsidized by the parishes or by the archdiocese. Tuition does not cover the cost of educating a child. And the difference is made up both through parish and archdiocesan subsidies. So as much as Catholics can support their schools, local or diocesan schools, it would be greatly appreciated because there is a great need.
So a person who, if I wanted to donate money in growing up, you know, the Italian Christian altar boy as a kid growing up, right? I get the envelope on Sunday.
Right.
I get it. But if I wanted to make a donation to the school instead, I don't have to do it through the church, don't have to do it through the basket. I can actually come to the school or contact you with the school and say, tell me what your tuition is, tell me what the books are, and be able to make a contribution that can go towards putting a student who's in financial need and be able to do this either anonymously or even, you know. visibly, but.
Now, at the risk of being excommunicated, because you mentioned the envelope system to the church and the school, the answer is yes. You go directly to the school, or you can go to the parish if it's a parish school and say, I want to make a donation, but it has to be to restricted funds for a child's tuition, a child in need. And then you would rely on the administration and the parish pastor to determine which child is in most need.
Yeah, I mean, I would, and I'm not going to ask you for an answer because I don't want to put you on the spot with it, but I would tend to believe that there are people out there that are probably reluctant to make a donation to the church, but would be willing to step up to put a child through, you know, to give a child an education. And I would assume that's probably, you know, that's probably pretty accurate. What do you think, Don?
Well, I'm waiting for him to give the.
I told him I'm not expecting an answer because I don't want to put him on the spot with that.
No,
he didn't prepare an answer for that. So
right.
Just. Well,
but I was going to say, how can they contact you if they someone in the audience?
Well, they can contact me at the school or via email. All right. The Transfiguration Academy is located at 10 Bradley Avenue, Bergenfield, New Jersey. The school's telephone number is 201-384-3627. Or they can contact me directly at via the internet email at principal@transfigurationacademy.org, all one word.
Let's say it again, so okay.
It's principal@transfigurationacademy.org, mm-hmm. And our website is up, and you can. There's a list of teachers, and my email address is there as well.
What's the website address?
www.transfigurationacademy, and it's the Transfiguration Academy in Bergenfield, New Jersey, because there are a couple.
TransfigurationAcademy.org.
Yes.
Right. You've said a lot of powerful things, to me, heartfelt things. You can really hear your heart in all of this, Sal.
As I said, it's probably the best job I've ever had. I've enjoyed it. I think it's worthwhile. And I think that, you know, we're doing things that are worthwhile, and there's no better feeling than. And I know that the term is give back has been used a great deal, but I think my education, thanks to my dad, who worked and sacrificed, and my mother, who took care of the house while we were doing that and allowed that to happen, is responsible for where I am today. And the values that they instilled in me as an Italian American, I would like to pass along that heritage. You see, no matter what heritage my students are, by example and by deed, I'm passing along my Italian American heritage and my values.
That's a pretty powerful statement. Yeah, and, you know, you should be commended for that. That is, you know, if more people did that today, the world would be a hell of a lot better place.
Well, it's not just me. I've got a great faculty. I think each one of them, they do the heavy lifting.
Mm-hmm. Well, with that, I think we'd want to thank Sal Trilongo for joining us today. Keeping the tradition of American Italians who are contributing to the future of America, and I think clearly by you're setting that example, and please keep that up, and we need more of that.
Well, thank you.
And I just volunteered Sal to come to the school because he some of the things he's done would I think the kids would really like to hear.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
I accept.
I figured he'd be offering my checkbook, but yeah, I mean,
I accept that too.
But yeah, I will tell you.
And don't worry about it. You could leave it blank. Just I'll fill it in later.
You'll help along. You'll help. Yeah. As long as you give me the little envelope that they that we used to get at the church, you know. I mean, that's what I'm used to, you know, putting the money in the envelope.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Me too.
It's like Pavlov's dog, you know. Just hand me an envelope when I walk into the building, and I'll fill it. Not a problem. But I will. I would gladly come to talk to the children.
Thank you.
We do a lot of that with the company. We've been going around doing a lot with cyberbullying and talking to the kids about the dangers of social networking, and that's something that you know, more and more kids are dealing with, and I'm sure you've gotten to see this over the years.
We've actually worked with two universities now, Montclair State and Keene University, with an anti-bullying program. In fact, I was very pleased. The program we developed at Transfiguration Academy, I submitted to them, and they passed it around to other Catholic schools to use as a model program. And then we're introducing another program through Keene University for children who have, let's say, a social deficiency, you know, who get very nervous around other people, get too nervous over exams, you know, the normal stuff, but to take the edge off of that and get them to cope with different things. And that program took off this year as a pilot. And we're going to continue it forward. So we're doing some new and innovative things at the Academy as well.
That's great. We just got done just putting the finishing touches on a video talking about cyberbullying and the dangers, but going at it from the parents' point of view. One of the things we'd be more than happy to do is share that video with you, and that you can share it with the parents.
Fantastic.
So that they can see it, and to see how they could recognize cyberbullying and what things they can do to react and respond.
Excellent.
So, we'd be more than happy to do that. But again, once again, Sal, thanks for coming in. We appreciate you coming into the studio and having you here tonight.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I enjoyed it.
So, Don, we got a guy who should have retired, didn't want to retire, does something, and comes up with, you know, a great second career. So what about you? You're at the retirement age.
I wish I could retire. I can't afford to right now. But I didn't work for a bank for 20 years.
Ah, there you go.
But I do want to mention what happened to Sal. Many years ago, I was asked by a member of the board of a private school here in New Jersey, which was in financial troubles, to come and look. And as it happened, I was teaching at Fairleigh Dickinson, and one of my students, when I was asking them what they did, this was an advanced marketing course, he said, well, I'm retired right now. I said, well, what did you do? He said, well, I ran Allied Chemicals agrochemical division. I said, you should be teaching this course, not me. And I thought of him, and I brought him, and I said, Homer, his name is Homer Dudley.
Homer Dudley?
Yes, see, he was...
Right, that's not the same Homer Dudley that was active in World War II, for espionage, the encryption.
Right.
He created the encryption, and then he took the, and then how to decrypt it. We actually studied Homer Dudley.
Well, I don't think this is the same Homer Dudley, but they might have been related, because Homer had this down-home way about him that you would never know how smart he was.
How many Homer Dudleys could there be out there?
I don't know. But let me just finish this story, because I think it's germane to this, which was essentially Homer came and took over the school, and within 3 years had made it. Put it on sound footing. And while I was there, I said, Homer, you had 900 people working for you, and now you don't even have a secretary. He said, Don, I'm having fun. And that's what it's all about.
Having fun.
Amen.
All right, there's a good way to close out the show. So, folks, as we close out, I want to once again thank our special guests for standing a part of this evening with us. We hope you enjoy the show and that you'll share this program with your family and friends. Please follow us on Facebook at American Italian Radio and on Twitter at our hashtag USA Italian Radio. For Don Mazzella and myself, thank you for listening, and we hope to have you back real soon.
Thank you for listening to American Italian Radio, the Air Channel. We hope you've enjoyed today's program, and we look forward to you joining us again next week. Please follow us on Facebook at American Italian Radio and on Twitter at #USAItalianRadio.